Welcome to White Shores, the podcast for spiritual beings having a human experience. Let me invite you to walk once more beside me on White Shores to talk about the real meaning of life and the true power of what is unseen. Let's discuss dreams, intuition, manifesting, as above, so below, angels, afterlife, the science of consciousness, and other infinite possibilities within and all around you. I hope every episode informs, inspires, and illuminates. So, now the scene is set. Allow the grey rain curtain of this world to roll back and all to turn to silver glass. Let's walk barefoot together on the gentle, glistening sands of White Shores to see what mystery lies beyond the material. Thank you for arriving safely on White Shores, a far green country under a swift sunrise. I've got a future forward guest for you today that I'm very, very excited about. Carlisle T. Smith, PhD, is Lifetime Professor Emeritus of Psychology at Trent University. And he is also Director of Trent University Sleep Research Laboratories. Or I'm sure he will tell he's retired now, but this is what his biography on Amazon is saying. But the reason he's on White Shores is he's published widely on the topic of sleep, memory, and dreams, and has taught courses on these topics for many years. His work has been the subject of numerous radio and television documentaries all over the world. He was also awarded the Trent University Distinguished Research Award in 2000 and the Canadian Sleep Society Distinguished Scientist Award in 2009. And if that wasn't impressive enough, he wrote a book called Heads Up Dreaming, which was way ahead of its time because it was talking about the ability within us all to quite literally dream our future. I'm really thrilled he's here today. Hello, Carlisle.
Hello.
Hello, you're here. How wonderful. Now, for people new to you and your work, would you mind just sharing your story? It's a fascinating one from reading your biography, and why you wrote Heads Up Dreaming.
Oh, boy. Well, the idea that I could actually have a dream about the future started in graduate school, and I had decided that sleep was going to be my research topic. My professors were really upset because it was not on the radar then. But I decided that it was going to be my topic, and I stuck with it. And so my thesis was on studying sleep in rats and memory and so on. At the same time, I was very interested in dreams, and I read everything that I could get a hold of at that time. And just, I think almost by accident, I stumbled onto the idea that I had dreamt the day before about someone coming to visit me in my office. And so I kept an eye on dreams. I wrote them all down very faithfully every morning to make sure that they're, you know, and so that I could check back and see whether I had anything in the next day had happened that looked at all like what I had dreamt. And lo and behold, I could do it. Not all the time. And as it, looking at a lifetime's worth of dreams, about 1 in 10 was actually one of those dreams. And they didn't always have anything important to tell me. They weren't life-saving necessarily. They might have been just little, you know, snippets of things that happened. Someone came by that hadn't come by in a long, long time. Someone contacted me that I hadn't seen in many years, high school or something like that, or something so unusual that it couldn't be a coincidence. And as I kind of went on from week to week, I just had this little packet of information that I could share with very many people because it was something that kind of had people looking at their watches and saying they had to go now. They just didn't want to talk about such things. And so I just kept them to myself. And as the years went by, I went to postdoc in France, and I went, did more sleep things. Over the years, I had several trips, sabbaticals to France, Belgium, places. And I did my main middle-class research, I called it. And at the same time, I kept an eye on my dreams. I taught my family how to do it. It's not very hard. Everybody seems to be able to do this. And sometimes I think your brain just does one that's not very important, but just to show you that, hey, it's working. Why not use me? And that's the book that I wrote is really just a basic kind of history of how that all came about, and how it started and how I developed it and so on. And I have to say, I have always had to struggle to get my dreams in the morning. It's always been, I had to work on it. And my wife can have two or three in a night. And I wrote hers down for a while too, but I got exhausted doing that. And when the children came, we noticed that they were able to sort of spontaneously do it. So we taught them, said, no, you can do this. Look, you just, and once they got it, they were good. So I'm surrounded by people who are at least as good as I am, but they could do it too. So, and then I expanded my circle of friends who could do it and who would listen to me. And as time went on, I think a big moment was when I had was able to convince the department that I needed to have a dream course. And it had taken a long time just to get the sleep course, but a course on dreams itself was, something that a lot of people didn't want to vote for. So, but finally, I did get it. And then it was wildly popular. And so that.
Of course. I would expect nothing less for dreams.
I had about 65, the class size was limited to 65. So I was allowing 65, 67 in a course. And there was a long waiting list. The waiting list would be like, several hundred. That allowed me then to do a number of things. And I was able to discover that the kids in the class could do this too. And the book is about, that describes how, for example, the kids in my class, I decided to make them into an experiment at one point. I got about 15 years of teaching a dream course. And I decided to take this one class and see if they could dream about someone else. Now, that was maybe a step beyond just heads-up dreaming for yourself. And I had done lots of dreams, and my family had done lots of dreams where you are sort of warned about, something that's going to happen later in the day, and you kind of adjust for it and watch for it. Sometimes you can't change anything, but you go, oh, yes, there's my dream happening. And it at least even simple things like, oh no, I dreamt I'm going to have to be in a meeting with so-and-so. And sure enough, later that day, there'd be an important emergency meeting with people whose points of view weren't necessarily the same as mine, say. And so I would say, oh, no, it'll be slightly unpleasant. And so, but I would be warned that at least I was going to have to do that. And so there was a lot of reasonably practical things that were helped by Heads Up Dreams. But an important event happened. I used to go to what used to be called ASD, Association for the Study of Dreams. This is where anybody who had dreams and was interested in such things would go. It was a United States organization, but I used to go occasionally and hear and listen to people who some of them actually had these kinds of dreams too. And it was kind of fun to be with people who actually wanted to talk about dreams. And one year, I decided I would join this group. So Robert Van de Kassel is one of the icons in dreams, and he's written a book, so on. But one year, he had this course. I think he called it the Dream Helpers or something. But there was about 15 of us in this course, in this little group. And he said, now, what I want you to do is I want you to dream. One of you has to volunteer. Someone with a serious problem, doesn't have to be, it can be anything, but it has to be a serious problem that's been worrying you. And I want you to be the guinea pig and not tell us what it is, but you're the target. And all the other people will, you know, we didn't know each other. These were, you know, 15 people who really didn't know each other very well. And they were to all go to bed that night and dream about this person. This was a man, as it turned out. Whatever it was, and come back, and the next night we would write all the dreams down and see if there was any pattern. And I thought, I was really a little skeptical about that, but I did it. I had this dream. I thought, well, this doesn't sound like anything that is worrying me. But anyway, to my astonishment, there was a number of people who got the same theme as I did, and we got this guy good. He even wasn't going to tell us all of his problems right away, but he finally eventually broke down and cried a little bit. And my dream was that he was standing on his door of his house, on the steps of his house, and there was a woman and a boy, and they had suitcases, and they were walking away, and it was quite sad. I didn't know what to make of that dream. But as it turned out, this man's basic problem was that he'd had a big fight with his number three wife and son, and had told them to go away, to get out, and they had to leave, and that was just before he came, and he was kind of upset about that. But we got him good, and I couldn't believe that we had actually done that. But the idea that you could dream about someone else, so that kind of got me started.
Becoming a dream oracle is what you're saying, really, Carlisle, there, isn't it? You're being a kind of a dream oracle, like in ancient times when people would go to the temples and ask the oracles to dream on it. Oh, yes. Really, isn't it? Yes. It's astonishing.
But
I just have to pull you towards what you're saying about dreams being a normal biological activity. Is that where you are at now? Do you think that this is something that we all have, the ability to have these kind of heads-up dreams that you were way ahead of your time talking about in an era when dreams were not given the platform that they are now, and the, you know, the research going into it and the mystical approach wasn't as widely embraced? You were really talking about it at a time, weren't you, when, you know, you went to sleep and you slept, dreams were nonsense.
Yes.
So you were so brave and visionary to do that.
Yes. Oh, yes. I decided to have my class try to do this, and we got just a picture of someone, and I didn't know the person. I still don't know the person. I never met them, but they were 500 miles away. But they were asked him to dream about the picture of this woman and what her problem might be, and I had the whole class do it. And I did a little pilot study, and gosh, they were doing it. I tried a more formal experiment, and lo and behold, she turned out to have multiple problems. I didn't know anything about her until after it was done, but she had multiple problems. She had multiple cirrhosis in her, especially in her right arm. She couldn't do anything much with her right hand much. She was a major caregiver for her mother.
So were the dreams that people had kind of like indicative of these problems? Were people getting sort of precognitive hits when they reported?
Oh, they
wow. Could you tell me how how you gave them a picture of this woman. Yeah. How did you get them to incubate that dream?
We had those seminars that people were not that receptive. They said, well, what do you mean? How can we do that? I said, well, no, you take the picture and you go to bed and you say, I really want to have a dream about this poor person's problems. I didn't tell them what the problems were. But just say, then if you think you've got one, you write it down. If you don't think you've got one, well, if it's obviously not for her, well, then you don't. But that's all I gave them. I just said, look, you and that you can do this. And tried. It was mostly a pep talk to get people to actually try it. And 75%, about 73% is it, actually were able to do this, well over half the class. And
did they go, before they went to sleep, they looked at the picture and said, I want to have a dream about this woman. I'm just trying to think how she filtered into their dreams.
Yes. That's what many of them did. They would sit with the picture and look at it. Some of them put this pic, they would write down a little note that they were going to do it and put it under their pillow. There was all sorts of little, they did different things. And some of them told me what they had done. But in the end, somehow managed to convince themselves that this was, they were supposed to dream about someone else. And that was all of the direction that I gave them. I found that it was just the idea that we could do this. I mean, people were looking at me really quizzically, like, whoa, Kim, what? And then I just told them, I just convinced them that you, this is something that you can do. And I told them about my experience and how other people did it. And this was something that they could do. And I guess people in a dream class are have sort of self chosen, they're a special kind of person, maybe, anyway. There's a lot of people, just the general population, would be the same. But these people really wanted to try. I made it seem as if it was really a valuable thing that you do this. You know, this woman knows you're dreaming about her, and, you know, like, it would be important if you could do this. So they felt it was a valuable thing. And goodness, they were able to, there was about, 40, I think it's 48 of them that actually, of the 60 some that actually had really good insight into what was happening to this person. And she had several problems.
Did they dream about her, or did they dream about scenarios that were symbolic? And then when you came back, you could interpret them as being about.
They dreamt about scenarios that were, I mean, they didn't necessarily dream about the woman. They dreamt about, for example, there was people who dreamt about sitting watching TV and they were looking after a woman who had to be in an incubator to breathe because she couldn't breathe. Now, this woman's mother was living in their house and she had lung cancer. And she had to look, she was trying to look after this mother as well as her own problems. And that was something that was just bizarre because they said, well, what, you know, I'm watching television with my friends, but I have to look after this woman. And I considered that to be a hit. I mean, nobody else had that. And I did a group, I had my nerdy nephew make up a woman who didn't exist. And I did the same thing again. I said, look, you've got to, this woman needs you to dream about her. And they did not have any dreams that were different. And I thought even that they might. I thought they might, you know, to please me, they might actually make up a dream or two about cancer or something. But that didn't happen. That didn't happen. They just said, well, I don't know, I maybe I did, maybe I didn't, and here's my dreams. But there was nobody there. They just simply had dreams. They had had dreams before. I was able to compare before, and I was able to compare with my other class, which had real mother, the real person, and They were quite different. They were quite different. So
this is very interesting because, you know, I mean, I've sort of researched dreams all my life, and often we are dreaming about our own state of mind, aren't we? That Jungian and Freud, and, you know, we're dreaming about our own mindset. And what I love is that you're suggesting we also have this capacity, if we set the intention and are serious and think it's valuable, to actually step outside ourselves in a dream and become empathetic towards someone else and maybe help them. That is beautiful, isn't it?
I think that it's possible. You could get somebody to do this. It wouldn't take very much for me to, I mean, the biggest problem is to get people to actually remember their dreams and write them down. If you can get them to do that. And sometimes I think dreaming, I've lost so many dreams waking up in the middle of the night and going, oh, well, you know, it'll be an amazing dream. And then thinking, oh, it's really not that important. Your judgment of your dream is so bad. And I found that people paid attention more when they were actually concerned that they get this dream.
Wow. I'm so pleased. I've got so many questions to ask you. This is absolutely fascinating. But you're saying this ability of the dreaming mind, in your opinion, you don't feel that violates the laws of or the rules of quantum physics. Would you mind talking a bit about that?
Well, I'm not sure. What?
Huge question.
I do like the idea that somehow this is a quantum phenomenon. It's got, you have all of these probable things, or a number of them. And when you decide with your mind on something, then one of them becomes reality. I don't like to say the word collapses. There's a group of people who use that, and there's a whole lot of physicists who don't, they're not in that camp. But gosh, one of the things about dreams, that my dreams anyway, and the dreams of the people that I've looked at, they are never completely accurate. There's always some things in them that there's lots of hits and it's got to be, but there's some things in it that are wrong. It looks like it's just a scenario. It's a possibility. So when you have that as a that fits with quantum physics, it's a possibility at this point. It hasn't happened. There it is. And one of the things that makes it worthwhile to do is that you can change. Maybe you can't completely change it. You can't, especially if it's something unpleasant. But you can limpen it. You can make it less intense. You can make it so that it's not such a disaster. Mm-hmm. And for example, I have, and the alternative is that if these things are simply pictures of the future and you can't do anything about it, I don't think that I would want to tell people to do this. Why should you be allowed to see something bad that's going to happen to you tomorrow if there's absolutely nothing you can do about it? There's no, that's it. You're going to break your leg. Sorry. And that's it. And so, you know, a day ahead and you still break your leg. I mean, I don't think Mother Nature would do that to us. So, you can modify things, I think, and so that the what you're seeing in a dream is a probability. Is that if you're still going to do all the things that you do now, you don't heed this, you will, that's what's going to happen to you, and it's just. It's a statement of,
yes.
And I have examples of where people have modified the outcome of the dream, which was still not great, but much better than it would have been if you hadn't sort of honored the dream and done this little something that changed it just somewhat. And I like the idea of free will as well. So,
and so, it's truly a heads up. Your dreaming mind is dipping in and giving you a heads up, a strong hint and an indication. Sorry, you also say this often happens in a timely manner when you say it happens when you need it to happen. That's something very interesting that comes out of your book as well.
Yes.
When you really need a cooperative agreement.
And I noticed that the ones that were really important, really more important to me, like really, you know, there's a lot of what I would consider trivial ones. They happen and you wonder, well, this hasn't changed my life at all. But I mean, I kind of see that I had dreamt it, but it doesn't seem, if I hadn't remembered it, nothing would have happened maybe. And then there's some that are really, oh yeah, I'm glad I dreamt about that. I was ready for that. So I called them more important ones. I had a lot of more of the important ones where had a time lag of, weeks, months. And I assume that that's to get you get them at the proper time so that you can get ready. I don't know how this is arranged, but that's how it seems to me. Really important ones, they start early. They're not just the same day things, little trivial things that you see. They sometimes...
Your dreaming mind's your best friend, isn't it? It's got your back. Your dreaming mind's got your back. It's there when you need it, like a good friend.
Yes,
this is so interesting.
You have some kind of guardian angel or something. I don't know what it is, but there's something there that you can get.
Oh, you're speaking converted here. I think the dreaming mind is amazing. Have you got if you could give one tip to people listening who are new to this, the precognitive potential, because first of all, we had the idea that dreams were trivial. Then they become psychological self-help tools to understand yourself better. A lot of people, you know, took a long time to be persuaded of that. Now we're adding that maybe they're precognitive. Is there one tip that you could give people to, you know, boost their chances of having a precognitive dream or understanding the precognitive potential of their dreams better?
You know, other than, you know, you're writing them down carefully and keeping an eye on them later, I think one of the things that always amazed me is that you can have a dream that's about something important and you don't get it. You're the last to know. And if you tell someone else, not someone who doesn't care about dreams, but a friend or someone who's going to at least consider it, they might actually go, that's what I think it is. I mean, they might actually be able to see it before you do. There's this, I call it the blind spot. And you simply are not.
That is brilliant advice.
I don't know if you're in denial, but you simply don't really, is this, you know, what do you think this means? And you might actually somehow know about it, but when someone else says it, you go, oh yeah, maybe. I was a heavy smoker in graduate school, and I smoked 65 cigarettes a day. And that was...
Wow! Goodness gracious, I hope you don't now.
And the other people did too. I mean, my roommate did. A lot of people smoked. Everybody smoked. But I had a dream one night that I was crossing this corduroy bridge. It's a bunch of logs all close to each other, and that was the bridge, and you walked across. And as I started to walk across, these things, the ends of the logs extended into poisonous snakes. And they bit me on my legs and my body. And then I realized that the long logs were Rothman cigarettes, my favorite smoking habit. And I could feel the poison going through my body. So I woke up. It was a very upsetting dream. But it was kind of early in my dream career. And I thought, well, yeah. It's just a dream, right? I'll ask my buddy across the hall what he thinks, and he just said, "Yep, sounds like your habit's going to kill you, all right." I mean, he got it, and I went,
"He saw it clearly."
And I went, that's what it's for. That's what that is, all right. Oh boy. So then I had to go.
Did that dream tell you, did that dream encourage you to stop smoking?
It did, and I did. And I haven't smoked in...
A single dream is more powerful than 1,000 realities, to quote Tolkien. That's wonderful.
I can still feel the poisons coming through my body, even now. And that dream, I don't know, many years ago. It was very helpful in my being able to quit. I mean, it's not so easy, I can tell you that. But I managed to do it.
No. And well done. And you know, your dreaming mind helped you. And I think that's such an empowering way to end this remarkable interview. Professor Carlisle Smith, thank you so much. Would you mind just leaving your contact details? I assume Heads Up Dreaming is available on Amazon. But if anybody wanted to message you about a precognitive dream experience or to ask for your insight, is there a contact that you could share?
Yes, there is. There's an email. And it's simply carlisleheadsup@gmail.com. And it's all carlisleheadsup.
So carlisleheadsup.
All one word, no dashes, nothing.
Yeah. I'll leave up. That's the email we've been corresponding on. So I will put that in the show notes, Carlisle. And I just want to thank you so from my heart and soul for all you are and do, and for the dreaming inspiration that you started all those decades ago, which is now really gathering pace as the precognitive dream community is really understanding the reality of our dreaming mind's ability to feel the future. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, my pleasure. I'm delighted to hear that suddenly everybody's taking an interest in this. It's just a pleasure.
Thank you from my heart and soul for being here and walking beside me in spirit on White Shores. Sensitive, kind, compassionate souls like you who see beyond the material are needed more than ever today to help this earth heal and evolve. If you have any questions, stories, or insights to share, I absolutely love hearing from you and aim to reply to everyone in due course. My website is www.teresachung.com. My contact email is angeltalk710@aol.com. And you can message me via my Instagram handle, TheTeresaChung, as well as my Facebook and Twitter author pages. Until we meet again on these white shores, keep being amazing spiritual you, sending my eternal love and gratitude.